Simba's got issues. By the way, just so you know, I watched The Lion King a little while back. I thought, man, that's about 20 or 30 sermons you could do from this movie. Don't be surprised. You know, be careful what you wish for. But I want to talk about the fact that Simba's got some issues. And Simba's issues stem from this fact that he thinks he is responsible for his father's death. You know, as the story goes, that his father was ran over by a herd of wildebeest, and he was ran over while he was trying to rescue Simba. Of course, Simba doesn't know that really his father was pushed in, but Simba thinks he's responsible for all of this. So Simba came up with a solution. He ran. He ran from Pride Rock and all the responsibility and the fact that he was supposed to be the king and the fact that he was supposed to be the leader and he was the one that was supposed to take his spot. He ran from all of that. As a matter of fact, he adopted a new phrase for his life. Remember it? Hakuna Matata? It means no worries. He's just going to kind of live life on the easy side because he's running. And well, the thing is that he's kept running. He's ran, and he's ran, and he's ran, and he's ran, and he's ran. And he hasn't really gone any further as far as distance goes, but he's about as far as he can get from being a king, from being a leader, from having the responsibility that he's supposed to take as far as his life goes. And this kind of intersects with what we've been talking about. We have been looking at famous biblical runners. People that God came to and said, hey, I've got a job for you, I've got a mission for you, I've got something I need you to do. And they ran from what God had given them to do. And we've been kind of following a very boring outline. We've been looking at four lives, and this is life number three, and we've been asking the same five questions for the past few weeks. Who are they? Who were these men? Why were they important to me? Why did they run? What was the reason they left the mission? I mean, there's always got to be a reason, right? We wanted to know, how did God pursue them? How did God restore them? And then how did God use them? And we're interested in these questions because, you know what? How these men were pursued might very well indicate how God is looking to pursue us. Especially today's story. Now, I want to remind you where we've been. We started this by looking at one of the first runners out there, and that was Moses. Remember, God said, go down to Pharaoh and tell him, let my people go. And Moses said, I don't think so. And he gave God all of the wonderful excuses about why he wasn't the man for the job. And eventually God told him, you're going to go anyway. And Aaron went, and that caused a mess. But we looked at the whole story of Moses. And then last week, we looked at what is probably the most familiar runner to us. When you think running in the Bible, this guy is like the definition of it. We looked at Jonah. And the focus there was how God pursued him. But today, we're going to look at one that you might not really catch as a runner. His name is John Mark, also known as Mark. He's a young man, and maybe I do need to tell you exactly who this man is, because maybe you don't know, but he is the man that is responsible for the Gospel of Mark. He's the guy, when you turn Matthew, Mark, okay, he's the guy that wrote Mark. Now, he wrote Mark as kind of a second-hand thing. It wasn't him that actually witnessed all the miracles of Christ. He wrote Mark because he was part of the early church. As a matter of fact, his mom used to bring him to church. Her name was Mary. And as part of the early church, well, he got to know this other guy that was kind of important. His name was Peter. He was a protege of Peter. Listen to what Peter writes about him in 1 Peter 5:13. She who is in Babylon, chosen together with you, sends you her greetings, and so does my son Mark. Now, when Peter calls Mark his son, he's not talking about his biological son. He's talking about the kid that kind of followed along behind him, much as Timothy was called Paul's son. Mark is a protege of Peter. So odds are where Mark got his information to write his gospel, we could have just as easily called that the Gospel of Peter. Because it was probably written after Mark had spent years wandering around with Peter and learning from Peter. Speaking of Paul, Well, Mark was part of that very first missionary team. That very first missionary team that went out to start those churches of Asia Minor, that big trip that was taken. As a matter of fact, he's mentioned several times in Scripture. He's mentioned in Acts chapter 12, verse 25. When Barnabas and Saul had finished their mission, they returned to Jerusalem, taking with them John, also called Mark. He's mentioned again in Acts chapter 13, verse 5. When they arrived at Salamis, they proclaimed the word of God to the Jewish synagogue. John was there with them as their helper. Now, I don't know whether helper meant he was the dude to set up the sound booth, or whether he helped teach a class, or whether he was the person that pitched the tent. I don't know what he did, but we know that he was helping them in this mission. And then we get Colossians chapter 4, verse 10. My fellow prisoner, Archytas, sends you his greetings, as does Mark, the cousin of Barnabas. You received instructions about him. If he comes to you, welcome him. And all of a sudden we see that, well, Mark sounds like he's pretty important. That's a pretty impressive resume. To set learning between the pillars of Peter and Paul, that's pretty good. But you understand, Mark has a problem. Mark doesn't deal well with adversity. As a matter of fact, we don't know for sure. He never says it's him, but he's the only gospel writer that mentions this little fact. We think the first time we meet Mark is actually in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 14, verse 51 through 52. A young man wearing nothing but a linen garment was following Jesus. When they seized him, he fled naked, leaving his garment behind him. The very first Christian streaker. By the way, let's not try this, okay? But here is this young man, and he's doing his best to follow Jesus. And the night they arrested Jesus, he's hiding in the bushes looking at it, and they seize him, and he gets so scared, he runs right out of his clothes. That's Mark. That's who this young man is. He just did not deal well with adversity. So the question becomes, because that's not the run that I'm interested in. The run through naked, while that might make an interesting sermon, it's not the one that I'm interested in. I'm more interested in Acts chapter 13, verse 13, because this idea that Mark doesn't deal well with adversity, well, it comes up again. From Paphos, Paul, his companions, called Perga and Pamphylia. They really need to name cities easier in the Bible, don't they? Where John left them to return to Jerusalem. So we're back in this same missionary journey that Mark had gone on with John and with Barnabas and Paul. I'll get all the names straight here in a minute. So we're on this same missionary journey. And somehow at this point, well, the missionary journey goes this way. And well, Mark decides to go back home. And when I read that scripture, that doesn't sound all that bad until I turn just a few more pages, and you know what? We get to, I'm going ahead of me, I forgot to flip my slides. We get to chapter 15, verses 37 through 38. And this is what we find out. Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with them. But Paul did not think it wise to take him. And listen to this. Because he had deserted them in Pamphylia, and had not continued with them in the work. Now that sounds a little more serious. It says he deserted him. I mean, that's kind of a harsh thing. All of a sudden, you've gone from labeling Mark as this guy that just turned and went home to Paul thinks he's deserted him. And this causes great issues. It says, we don't know what happened. Look at the story. It doesn't say why he went home. It doesn't tell us that Mark just did this or did that. So I guess we're kind of left to speculate. What would cause somebody to desert a mission? Hey, my son just got back from camp. And we went down there Friday night and to have a meal with them. And he was supposed to stay one more night. And we got down there. And you know what my son asked me? Can I just get in the car and come home with you? You know why? He was homesick. I mean, this was the second week in a row he had been on the road. And maybe that's Mark's problem. Maybe Mark was just this young kid, this young guy, and he got out there on the road, and he thought, man, isn't this going to be an adventure, and isn't this going to be cool? And maybe he's just homesick. Hey, maybe Mark's problem was he got a little tired of living on the road. That's tiresome, isn't it? Living out of a suitcase? I don't think Mark would have liked that very much. I know I don't like it. Hey, maybe he had a personality conflict. You know, he's got the Apostle Paul with him, and if you know anything about the Apostle Paul, he's kind of a direct little individual. Maybe there was some kind of conflict. See, I think the fact that he wasn't given credence to why he left, I think it says something very definite about him. And I think the fact that it doesn't tell us why he left is something that we can adapt to our lives. Because let me ask you a question. Has God ever given you a to-do? Has God ever given you a mission? Has God ever given you something that you just knew is something you were supposed to do, and you started out all well and good? Man, you came out and you were ready to go, and you were ready to charge forward, you were ready to move, you were ready to make a difference. And then it turned out to be more of a job than you thought it would be. And it took a little longer than you thought it was going to be. And you know, as the years went by, you just kind of took the mission that God had gave you and you kind of put it on the back burner. See, we're not told why Mark left this missionary journey. But we are told that he went home to mommy. That's what he did. And so here he is. And then there's some impact to this. I wanted you to take a look at how God pursued him. We're over in Acts chapter 15, verses 37 through 41. I'm going to read the whole section to you because it's quite interesting. Sometime later, Paul said to Barnabas, so here we go again. Trip number two. The missionary journey is over. Paul and Barnabas are back in Jerusalem. They've shared the, woohoo, let's have the little party, let's have the celebration, let's give the report. And now they're going back out again. Let us go back and visit the believers in all the towns we preached in the word of the Lord and see how they are doing. Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with them. But Paul did not think it wise to take him because he had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in the work. And then listen to this. Paul and Barnabas, the dynamic duo. They had such a sharp disagreement that they parted company. Barnabas took Mark and sailed for Cyprus, and Paul chose Silas and left and commended the believers to the grace of the Lord. He went through Syria and Sicilia, strengthening the churches. So here's Mark, the quitter, the deserter, the man that couldn't finish. And the ship is getting ready to go again, and Barnabas wants to say, hey, let's give him a second chance. Let's take John and Mark. And I want to tell you something. Whatever Mark did to leave that first mission, it must have been serious. Because this says Paul and Barnabas entered into a heated debate. They had a disagreement and an argument, and it must have been pretty serious because when it's all said and done, Barnabas and Paul split up the act. And Paul took Silas and went his way, and Barnabas decided to give Mark his second chance, and he went his way, and that was kind of the last we ever heard of the team of Paul and Barnabas. So whatever Mark did must have been really, really, really serious. But I want you to take a look at how God pursued Mark, because I think it's important. You see, because when God pursued Moses, Moses got a burning bush. I mean, there was God, and Moses had ran from Egypt, and there was God in the burning bush, and the burning bush wasn't being consumed, and Moses got caught, and Moses got a miracle. And you know, I think sometimes that's what we look for. We look for the burning bush when we're running from God. And well, Jonah? Man, look at what Jonah got to call him back. Jonah got a storm and a fish and a voice from heaven. He got a plant and a worm and a desert storm. God sure did put a lot of resources into calling Jonah back. Jonah had to feel awful valuable for God to spend this much time. And you know, I think sometimes, even though we don't want to be Jonah, I think sometimes we're looking for God to pursue us that way. We want God to rock our boat a little bit. We want God to give us some attention. And God, we want God to give us some affection. And we want God to do that. And that's how we think God is supposed to call us back. But what did Mark get? All Mark got was Barnabas. All Mark got was this fellow Christian believer. See, I think that's how God kind of does it these days. I think we're spending way too much time trying to look for the burning bushes. We're spending way too much time trying to hear the voice of God. And God just continues to push people into our path to say, you know what you should be doing? You know how God could use you? You know what God wants to do with your life? I know I've shared this story before, but it's the adage that fits. It's like the old man standing on top of the roof during the flood. God sends him, a canoe comes, he's praying to God, and a canoe comes by and says, want to ride? He says, no, I'm going to wait on God. First thing you know, a boat comes by and says, you want to ride? And the man says, I'm waiting on God. He just keeps praying, and a few seconds later, he comes a helicopter by and says, want to ride? He says, no, I'm just going to wait on God. And you know what? The man drowns. And when he gets in front of God, he says, God, I prayed. And God said, yeah, I know. I sent you a canoe, a boat, and a helicopter. What were you waiting for? You know, there's some serious problems. We're waiting for the burning bushes, and we're waiting for the storms, and we're waiting for the big plants, and we're waiting for the fish to come and grab us and jerk us. And all God's going to send you is just Barnabas, a fellow Christian, somebody that's got your best interest at heart. See, Barnabas wanted to give Mark a second chance. And we all deserve second chances, right? We're all supposed to have that ability. Remember, Barnabas was also on that first trip. That means you know what happened, don't you? Mark quit on him too. Barnabas had just as many reasons to be mad at Mark as Paul did. I think this says something about how Barnabas was able to put it aside. It says that, you know what? It was so serious, he fought with Paul. Barnabas was determined to give Mark this second chance. Interesting enough, in God's perfect wisdom, because the team split up, Satan, who uses a conflict to split them apart, guess what he actually did? Instead of creating one team to struggle with, now he's created two. It's kind of like the Hydra. You cut off one head and two grow back in this place. So now you had two teams that were going, all because Barnabas chose to stay in the line for Mark. That's impressive. You see, he decided to part ways with Paul and give Mark a second chance. And when he did this, he kind of played the role of Rafiki. I want to go back to that little clip that we saw. It's an important little clip. Because we don't know what Barnabas said to Mark to get him to go. But I want to use that little clip that we saw at the beginning to maybe give us some ideas of how we're supposed to approach people. I want you to think about when Simba was there at that pool when he came down and he looked into the water. And what did he say? That's not my father. That's just my reflection. And the old monkey said, you know what? Look again. Look a little harder. Look inside of who you are, and that's really who you are. And as Simba stared inside of himself and looked back into the water, who did he see? His father. I think sometimes as fellow Christians, when we're out there and we're trying to get people back into the saddle, we're trying to get people to stop running from God, that's maybe where we need to start. Instead of giving them the guilt trip, remind them who they are. Remind them that they accepted Christ. Remind them what God did for them. Tell them to look inside and then take a very good look at their life. That's what probably happened with Mark. Then he also reminded him exactly who he is. Remember, as the little cloud came up, and then we saw that, and then all of a sudden, and the little lion, the dad said, hey, remember who you are. Who was Simba? He was the king. After all, that's what happens, right? When the king dies, the prince becomes king. And since Simba was the lion prince, he was supposed to be the king. But really, who was Simba at that point in his life? He was a vagabond. He was a guy that hung out with a warthog and a lemur. He didn't take any responsibility for what he was doing, and so he had to be reminded, who you are, it's not what you've become. This idea that you had that it's all over, that what you did in your past is going to drag you down forever, it's not who you are. And I think a lot of times we forget that. You know, we have missions, we have things God has called us to do, we have things that are supposed to be done in our life, and then something goes wrong. I don't know what it is. Somebody in your life passes away, tragedy strikes, relationships fall apart, man, pick your topic, something happens, and for some reason we gain amnesia. We forget who we are. And then, I love this, he reminded him of his responsibility, didn't he? I mean, Simba, this isn't just about you. This isn't just about what you want. This isn't about what's good for you. This phrase you've adopted, Hakuna Matata, no worries, that's not how it works. There are responsibilities in life. I got a feeling Mark heard that from Barnabas. Mark, you signed up for this mission trip. Mark, you signed up to lead people to Christ. Mark, you signed up to share the gospel. I'd like to share something interesting. I know lots of people that have been called into ministry. And I know lots of people that have quit ministry. But you know what I've never heard somebody tell me? God called me out of ministry. I've never heard that phrase. I've heard lots of people say I gave up on it. Heard lots of people say I quit. But I've never heard anybody say, well, you know, God just told me and said, hey, look, He's called me out of it. See, it's kind of a lifetime thing. Once God gives you a mission, and I'm not just talking about being a preacher or an elder or what have you. Once God gives you a mission, it's your mission for life. Not that He won't call you to do other things. I know lots of people that were ministers and God called them to be missionaries. Okay? I know lots of missionaries that were missionaries and God called them to be ministers. Okay? But He didn't call them out of ministry. And for some reason, I think we get the idea that this is what God does. He calls us out of ministry, especially when we get around the age of about 65, 70. We call it retirement years, and we think that means we retire to the church and sit in our seat. God didn't call you out of ministry. God says you have a responsibility until, you know what? We plant you in the ground. That's when it's over. There's a responsibility to all of this. And then he goes on. He helped him learn from his mistake. I love the idea where he whacks him with the stick. You ever been whacked by a stick with God? I want to tell you what, I've got lots of bruises on my head where God, like, get it? And he tells him what? You can either what? Learn from it or forget it or wallow in it. That's what you can do with your mistakes. We all have them in our past. I challenge you, bring your mistakes forward. You can lay yours on the table and I'll match yours with mine. And I guarantee you'll be like, man, you don't need to be standing up there. You need to be sitting down there and somebody else needs. I've got lots of mistakes in my past. It's filled with it. But we have to learn from those mistakes and move on from those mistakes. Not just run and give up. He put him on the road of running. And I'm going to move away from Simba at this point and move back to Mark. Barnabas put Mark on the road running to God instead of from Him. That's pretty impressive, isn't it? Mark is going to go and give it another chance. And I guess that's where we need to look at. Exactly how did God pursue him? Well, Mark went. Don't forget that fact. You know, it wasn't enough that Barnabas just came and gave a good lecture. It wasn't enough that Barnabas put his reputation on the line. Mark had to do something. It wasn't enough that Mark just said, I'm sorry. Mark had to get up off his duff and he had to go. And when he went this time, it was much different because you know what? He went knowing the difficulties. That's important. After all, he'd already been on this road trip once in his life. And he knows this ain't going to be no picnic. He knows it's going to be hard work. But he went anyway. He went knowing the reputation he had. Remember, this guy had just split up to this date the best evangelistic team the church had going. Paul and Barnabas. Now split up. You think out on the road somebody isn't going to rag him a little bit about that? You think he isn't going to get a few lectures about that? You think Mark didn't know that? He's going to have to live with that reputation for the rest of his life. Every time adversity comes up, is he going to leave his clothes behind and run? Is he going to go home again? Is he going to quit? Mark had to live with that. He had to live knowing the work it would take to win the trust of others. Trust is a funny thing. Once you lose it, how hard is it to get it back? Think about our kids. Kids are implicitly trusting. But you know what? Wrong one of them. It'll be a very, very long time before they trust you again. Or if they trust anybody else. I know this from experience because I have two. Kids hold grudges really well. Did you know that? But Mark had to go and deal with this also. He had to earn back every bit of that trust from that team. That had to be difficult. And then you know what else? Sometimes that's all we can do. That's it. No fish, no miracles, no lesson to be given. Sometimes that is all we can do when we've run from God. We can just get up and try again. And I want you to realize that when you get up and you try again, there's no guarantee that you're going to be successful. You might fall on your face two or three times. All you can do is get up, try again. So let's talk about how God used him. Some of this is kind of obvious. Obviously, we have the Gospel of Mark. That Gospel was written to the Greek people. It was written in a way that the Greeks would understand who Jesus was. The obvious place that we can look at how God used Mark was in his ministry with Peter. I mean, it's important that you have somebody that you can mentor along beside, somebody that you trust. But these aren't the ones I want you to remember. Remember Paul? You know, the guy that started all the churches, wrote 13 books of the Bible, the very important dude that we all sometimes worship when he really is just a servant of God. Remember how he started this story? It says that he was adamant, but that also changed. I want you to look at Mark's life post-trip with Paul and post-trip with Barnabas. It's found in two references. The first reference is in Philemon chapter 1, 23 and 24, ironically written by the Apostle Paul. Epaphras, my fellow prisoner in Christ Jesus, sends you greetings. Also do Mark, Antichrist, Demas, and Luke, my fellow workers. I don't know how it happened. I don't know when it happened. The Bible doesn't tell us when they hooked back up. But somehow or another, Paul and Mark ended up back together. And some forgiveness seems to be happening. And no longer is Mark the young buck that is called a helper. It says he is a worker. What a title to be given. Especially by Paul, who was a workaholic. Oh my goodness. Now Mark is seen to somebody that is a worker for God. That's a pretty good restoration. But even that one isn't as good as what you find in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 11. Only Luke is with me. And remember, he's writing to Timothy. This is the last book chronologically that Paul is going to write. Paul even predicts his own death right at the end as he says, I'm going to be poured out as a drink offering. He's in prison. He's going to die. It's over. And listen to what he says. Only Luke is with me. Listen to what else he asked Timothy, his protege, to do. Get Mark and bring him to me with you, because he is helpful to me in my ministry. The the Apostle Paul, the man that was adamant that Mark couldn't go on the second trip because he was a quitter, now faces his own death, and who does he want by his side? Mark. That's impressive to me. That's restoration. You think you get things in your past that God can't use you? Well, just remember this simple statement. You can give up on God, but God does not give up on you. As long as you have breath left in your lungs, God's got a mission for you. As long as you are able to walk and talk, God's got a mission for you. And you know what? We can focus on the things that happened in our past and the things that went wrong and the things that are broken. We can focus on our present and the attitudes that we have. And the truth is that God still has that same mission for you. He didn't quit on Mark, even though Mark quit on him. And imagine how the story would have changed if Barnabas had not done this. If Barnabas had not pulled Mark back on that trip. If Barnabas had not went and gave him a kick in the seat of his pants. How much would the Bible have changed? Will you be missing the Gospel of Mark? Who knows what would have happened with Paul's ministry, because obviously Mark came back and played an important role in that. I guess maybe we should label Mark the comeback kid, because you know what? He did. He came back. And when he came back, he made a difference. And that's what I want you to take out of this lesson. You got things in your past you think disqualifies you from doing something great for God. God says, I can use it all. But here's the deal. I can't use it while you sit where you're sitting, wallowing in your past. I don't get to use it until you get up and follow me. You have to stop running. We're going to do a time of decision. But I want you to think about this. Because I'm guaranteeing you, you've got something in your past that you think disqualifies you from doing anything great for God. I can say it, and you know what? Something's probably already popped into your head. Let me assure you, that ain't the truth. God used murderers, adulterers, people that ran from Him. God used a prostitute. She's actually mentioned in the lineage of Christ. God can use it all. But He can't use it until you set it aside. He can't use it until you give it up. And that's what this decision time is about. Are you going to let your past embrace you and you're going to hang on to it and thus be useless to God? Are you willing to take that past and put it behind you and allow God to do something with what's left of your life? God desires useful servants. During this time of decision, maybe you're here and you've never met Jesus. You don't know who we're talking about. Let me encourage you. Come on forward. We'll tell you what it means. But if you have done that, let me ask you, what are you doing for Him? Not with Him. What are you doing for Him today? Have you accepted the mission He's given you? Or are you like Mark? You started out really good, and you just kind of gave up on it. And now you're just sitting on the sidelines. Let me encourage you to use this time to make a decision to get back in the game. Maybe you need to come forward. I'll pray with you. You can come here and kneel and pray. You can stay right there at your seats and pray whatever you need to do. This time is for you. Would you please stand, and we're going to pray.